Email Ani at volunteer@kbu.org or phone her at 503-231-8032, extension 213.
KBU is a proud sponsor of One Flaming Arrow Intertribal Film Festival 2016, bringing Native American and Indigenous independent film to Portland, Oregon, July 28th through the 31st. Opening night at Clinton Street Theater with showings through the weekend at Hollywood Theater and Rainmaker Gallery. Please consider supporting independent media. More information can be found at oneflamingarrow.com.
And this is KBOO Portland. It's 10:59 a.m. Coming up at 11, Rabia Yemen brings you the Digital Divide. In fact, here it is.
To the Digital Divide. This is Rabia Yemen, your host. And today we're going to be talking with Tali Sar, and about Rooster. And Rooster is, well, we're going to find out from her what Rooster is, but it's a website. It's a way for community members to give and take from one another. And it appears to be completely free. It's a way that people can share in their community. And so we're going to find out more about what Rooster is, and Tali will correct anything I just said that was wrong. Tali, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hi, welcome to the Digital Divide.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm excited that you're here, too. Well, for our listeners, I think there are a lot of people that don't know about Rooster. I've been on Rooster for probably about 6 months. And,
oh, nice.
And it's so fascinating to me, but I really want to know about, you know, like the background of it. How does it work and why does it exist and is it successful? So let's just start in with, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I'm Tali. I started Rooster with my husband and a group of my friends. Before that, I spent a long time in my career just building communities and thinking a lot about the value of communities and the power of connecting people in ways that are useful and mutually beneficial. So I spent a lot of years doing that, and all of it kind of came together for me at Rooster, and I feel like this is, you know, for me, the most powerful, most impactful way that I want to see people connect, and that's kind of why we started it. There's a long story, of course, of how we got to the idea, but that's what it is for me. And what you said is correct. So Rooster is, we call it a paid forward movement, and it's really about a movement of like-minded people who all feel something, you know, very much in common, which is that we have lost a deep sense of community, or not entirely lost it, but it's been degraded over the years, the sense of community, the sense of trusting the people around us, the sense of, you know, knowing our neighbors, sharing with them, supporting with them. So I think it's a broad phenomenon, something that people feel, and we want Rooster to be a place where people can start coming back together, getting to know one another, meeting each other, you know, not just on the web, but in real life, and just, you know, making friendships and connections based on these shared desires and values and goals.
Well, there's the mic. Explain to us what Rooster is in, like, its most concrete form.
Oh, right. So it's a website where people can sign up. So in Portland, Portland is our largest and most successful and fastest growing community. It's actually the test bed for Rooster, as we kind of envision it. But essentially, you go on Portland Rooster, you sign up, and you accept the community values and what it means, and you're saying, yes, I want to be a part of it. And you create a profile where people can see you. We use real names, real identities. You can even verify yourself by connecting your Facebook or in other ways. And then you're in, so you're part of this community. And what people do there, the rules are really simple. It's you can ask for whatever you need and help whenever you can, as long as it's for free. So it's almost easier to think of it in terms of what we don't allow. Like, there's no buying and selling. There's no people promoting their services. Instead, it's just people offering up what they have, whether it's items they're no longer using and they want to put them to good use and kind of recycle together. You know, I'm giving away a sofa. I'm giving away some art supplies I'm not using. Or my kids have grown out of their clothes. Maybe there's a mom out there that can put these clothes to use instead of me throwing them away. But also things like, hey, I really want to meet someone to go jogging with because I don't want to do it alone. Is there anyone out there who wants to join me? People are exchanging skills. So, for example, just this week we had someone who exchanged help in her garden in exchange for cooking a home-cooked meal. So almost any type of sharing that you can think of is allowed on Rooster, and you just post whatever you like. So as long as there's no money involved, you're good. That's what the community is for.
So it's not exactly a barter site because there doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, like give and take. There could be just give or there could be just take.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's why we call it a paid forward movement. So we think that, you know, we believe that for a community like this to succeed, anybody should feel like they are able to participate and able to contribute. And different people, different times can contribute different things and do different things. And we don't want it to become a place where, you know, we're keeping score or managing a board of who did what for who. But you kind of jump in and kind of trust your instinct of, you know, this is what I have to give right now. And maybe right now I really need something. And it's kind of flexible like that. So there are no hard rules, but I think the beauty of it is that, that people kind of naturally feel that balance and find that balance on their own.
So did you come up with the original idea for Rooster? Who came up with the idea and the concept of how it would work?
Yeah, so we actually came up with it a long, long time ago. So it was me and my husband who came up with it. If I want to be very frank, it's more my husband. So we were, at the time, this was way before we even started doing anything about it, right? It was about 5 years ago. And we were living remotely and living and working remotely at the time. We were traveling in Central America. And we've kind of, my husband and I have always been nomads, and we enjoyed traveling and exploring different places and different societies. And my husband especially has a very keen interest in anthropology. And he's been reading this book about how communities come together and how societies operate. The book is called, by the way, Debt, the First 5,000 Years. And it looks at the concept of depth between people and how different societies get different meanings. So the best example that the book gives is of this native tribe in Nigeria called the Tiv, where giving gifts and receiving gifts is part of the core values of their community. And whenever you see someone, you give them a gift, whether it's food or something for their house or fabrics or whatever it is. And the unspoken rule is that you never give someone a gift of equal value to that which has been previously given to you. And the reason is because this debt, this doing for someone and not expecting to kind of close the tab, symbolized the lasting trust and kind of the longevity of the relationship. And they used money with merchants that came from outside. So if a merchant only comes in once every few months, you have to pay them such that the debt is closed. So that was the book that he read, and we started discussing it. And we thought about how gifting really helps create friendships. We see it in our everyday lives. We kind of build a friendship with someone. We start trusting them gradually more and more and giving more and not expecting a return, because we know that the return is kind of there in the ether in the long term. And I don't know, are you familiar with couch surfing, for example?
Well, couch surfing is when you travel around and you stay on people's couches.
Yeah. So that's something my husband and I both did. So couch surfing, if you're not familiar, although I think most people would have heard about it, it existed before Airbnb. And it was the same concept as Airbnb, only there was no money involved. So people would just stay on other people's couches entirely for free. And what both sides would get out of it is just the experience of having this, you know, awesome person who's like-minded because he's a traveler, you're a traveler, and you're kind of staying together in their house. And, you know, there's always a risk of maybe I won't like this person, and then it's okay, we don't have to talk, and they'll be gone in 24 or 48 hours, and I won't have to hear about them again. But in most cases, the exact opposite happens. What happens is you discover this awesome person, you have great conversations, and you make lifelong friends. And we both have made lifelong friends through there. So kind of all of these experiences led us to think, what if we could have this type of gifting in the local community where, you know, couchsurfing gave me a lifelong friend, or gave my husband a lifelong friend in London. But what if you could get these lifelong friends right in your neighborhood? Because you've done some things together for free out of neighborly spirit, and now you see each other down the street again and again, and you make these connections that are, you know, really, really valuable and closer to you.
So those connections, they strengthen community.
Yeah.
They make it stronger.
That's what we believe in.
This gifting, it's really reminding me of kind of the ethos of Burning Man.
Yeah, we get that a lot. I think Burning Man is another great example of, they're called gift economies.
Yes.
So it's
giving with no expectation of receiving anything in return. I was so fascinated by the story you were just telling of the community where, like, giving a gift is kind of their social, you know, behavior, and that they would never give a gift that was the same value of a gift they had received previously, mm-hmm. So they would always give a gift that was greater in value. Is that what you meant?
The interesting thing is, it can either be greater in value or lesser in value. Both are acceptable.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
So it's really the act of giving a gift. I love that. I'm joining that tribe. I'm joining those people, but remotely from Portland. Now, where are you located? Where are you like physically in the country?
I am in Berkeley, California.
Okay, and you're located in Berkeley. Now, how many roosters are there? Is there a rooster in Berkeley?
Yes, there is. So we are all based here in the Bay Area. There's five of us on the team. Actually, almost seven now. With people that are kind of supporting us part-time. And we started, originally it was just like me and my husband out of our living room, and it didn't really start as a website. It was more something that we wanted to have, so we started the mailing list. And at the time, we were living in Palo Alto, which is not that far from Berkeley. And we just started a mailing list with our friends, and we said, hey, this is the mailing list. And the rules were very similar to what the website has today, right? It's like, join this mailing list, and you can ask for whatever you want, and we're just going to be helping each other as neighbors, and we don't want to see any buy and sell here. Those were the rules, and we just kind of invited our friends, and they invited their friends. So it was a very close, tight-knit group. And, you know, we were just doing it kind of as a hobby and something we wanted to see. And it worked great, by the way, like... you know, people, our friends were borrowing bikes from one another and giving away bread makers and finding language exchanges, you know, teach me Spanish, I'll teach you Japanese, things like that. So it was working really great. So you were asking if there's one in Berkeley. So obviously we started one in Berkeley because we moved here more than a year and a half ago. So there are a few rooster communities kind of around the Bay Area because other towns were hearing about it, and they were kind of asking, hey, can we start this here? So we were like, oh, sure, here's, you know, we just replicate our mailing list or website or whatever it was, because it was really like work in development, and they had it, and they got it. But the first time we really, really pulled a full website together that can support a larger community and can really like be impactful was right before we started in Portland.
And how long ago was that? When was that?
That was about a year ago.
Oh, it really is new.
Yeah, it's all pretty new. But what happened in Portland was absolutely blew our minds. I just want to say we launched it in July last summer, and within the first couple of weeks, we launched it because we were starting to get, you know, emails from more and more people were hearing about the concept and sending us, you know, emails, can we start it? And we weren't quite ready, but we were getting such a high demand out of Portland. And also we visited Portland a few times on various occasions, and we just loved the place and loved the people. And we knew that the perfect place for a rooster, like it jives really well with the people of Portland and their values. So started it last year. Within 2 weeks, I think we had about 500 people join us.
Wow.
Which was mind-blowing because, like, just to give perspective, in Palo Alto, that took us about 6 or 7 months.
Okay.
And Portland just got it right away, so it was pretty immediate success. And from there on, it just kind of kept on going. So we saw thousands of people joining every month. I think within, I don't remember exactly how long it took, but probably not more than 2 or 3 months, we hit 10,000 members, and we were just completely blown away. We made a video to celebrate that achievement, and we sent it to our members, and they sent it around. And I think that was a huge turning point because the media started hearing about us, and suddenly we were invited to all these shows and KGW Live at 7 and radio interviews and newspaper interviews. So that's when things really, really started to take off. So right now, as we speak, there are over 30,000 members in Portland alone.
That's amazing. Well, how many roosters are there in different cities altogether?
So Portland is the main one. So that's about 30,000. And then there are a few, several thousands kind of spread out in communities that are around the Bay Area. So Palo Alto is probably a few thousand now. Berkeley is a few thousand. But that's it. Portland is really the... the biggest one, and the first time we kind of launched it as a more serious endeavor and not just a hobby mailing list type thing.
Right. So people go to the Rooster website and they register. And if you're used to being on the internet, then you're used to going to a website and registering.
Yep.
And then that gives you access to the website where what you can see requests or offerings, or is it strictly email?
So you immediately, you sign up, it's a website, so you create your profile and then you have access to see everything that other people are posting and offering. And of course you get updates. So, you know, you can see the newest things and...
I know, and I get an email with a little digest.
Like a social network with updates.
And so help us understand how it's different than Craigslist. If you know, if we take away the part of Craigslist where you have to, you know, pay for things, how is it really different than that?
Right. So, yeah, I think there are a lot of kind of companies and organizations that are just taking, you know, Craigslist is obviously the number one most used classified site in the U.S., but it's not necessarily the most effective, or, you know, it's kind of, you know, we can all agree that it's kind of old school and hasn't changed much. So a lot of websites are just trying to give better experiences for certain parts of Craigslist. So probably like the best example is Airbnb, where you could previously find temporary housing on Craigslist, but it was nothing like the experience of Airbnb. And I think what differentiates Rooster significantly is that it's really focused on the people first. So it's true that there's stuff being exchanged, but that's not the point. The point is bringing together people who believe the same things, people who miss the sense of community, people who want to build a network where we can rely on one another. And then the power, like when we have these people together, the power to change and to do and to share and to combine our resources is endless. So I think, you know, Rooster will keep on evolving, and that's what we do. We talk to our community members all the time, and we learn new ways in which they want to connect and in which they want to share. So I think that's the main difference. It's about the people, connecting like-minded people, letting them, you know, share efficiently, help each other, benefit one another. It's about the community.
So anybody can go to Rooster. What is the address where people can go look at it while we're talking?
So in Portland, it's portland.therooster.co.
Portland.rooster.co.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll say maybe another thing, and this is important in how it's different from Craigslist, is we put, because we're about people, we put the emphasis on the acts of kindness, right? So when someone helps you on Rooster, usually you'll go and you'll send them a thank you note. And that thank you note is, you know, gives a significance to their effort that is beyond, you know, just what this thing is. So you want me maybe to read a couple of those?
That would
really
be great.
Cool.
I would love that.
Yeah, so here are just a couple that we got yesterday, right? So thank you, Laura, for the amazing series of Harry Potter. My 11-year-old is so excited about having them. She really enjoyed talking with you and looks forward to discussing the series with you as she moves forward through it. Right, so that's someone who got a Harry Potter series for their kid. Or thank you, Debbie, not only for the advertised walnut tree, but also for the Columbine maples and showing me your garden and the things I can do in the future or not do. Haha. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with me about all the different items, and fingers crossed, everything survives. Right, so this is a person, a member named Cheryl, who got obviously a lot of garden advice. So it's really a lot of emphasis on the acts of kindness themselves. And by the way, these are two notes that we got yesterday, and we literally get dozens of these every day. And they are all posted up on this big wall of gratitude that by now has, I think, over 4,000 different notes.
Is that the physical wall or an internet wall?
Oh, it's an internet wall. It's an internet wall on the website. And when you sign up, you can obviously have a look at it. And I think, you know, that is the core of it. We kind of commemorate, we give the act of kindness kind of its place and its visibility so that you can see how every, Like every note symbolizes one small act of kindness, but when you look at all of them together, you can really see how the community has huge impact.
It's wonderful. I'm Rabia Yemin with The Digital Divide. I'm talking with Tali Sar. They say that right, Tali?
Yes.
And she is one of the co-creators of Rooster, a sharing website on the internet. And again, that web address is portland.rooster.co, so you can go check that out. Tali, we're just going to take a little musical break, and we'll be back in about a couple minutes.
Great.
So stay there.
Soft and sweet, I met a dusky maiden one day. With her naughty glance and charming hula dance, she made me want to linger and play. Naughty hula eyes that slyly hypnotize, that cast a spell right from the start. Deep within them lies a smile that never dies, thrill and still my heart. Beneath tropic skies I found a paradise, and round my heart they wove a lay. How I idolize those naughty hula eyes that stole my heart away. Naughty hula eyes that smiley hypnotize, they cast a spell right from the start. Deep within them lies a smile that never dies, to thrill and still my heart. Beneath tropic skies I found a paradise, as round my heart they wove a lay. How I idolize those naughty hula eyes that stole my heart away.
And you're listening to The Incomparable Radio Zine, featuring this week The Digital Divide with your host, Rabia Yemin.
Any topic skies I found a paradise, and round my heart they wove a lay. How I idolize those naughty hula eyes that stole my heart away. That stole my heart away.
And welcome back to The Digital Divide. I'm your host, Rabia Yemin. We're talking with Tali Sar in Berkeley about Rooster, a website where people can share and gift freely. We were just talking about, you know, how it's different than Craigslist, Tali. So What about abuse? You know, it seems like in any system like this, no matter, you know, how lofty the ideals, you're still dealing with people. And most people are inherently want to, you know, just use a service and make the most of it. And I've been on Rooster, and I've actually never seen anything that seemed weird, but I'm guessing that with the volume that you see, occasionally something seems not right. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Like, how do you keep it free from abuse?
It's Actually, we have seen almost close to zero abuse, and I think it's due to a number of things. But first of all, the community is moderated, right? So if you posted something really offensive or spammy, it just will never go live. But also, I think the fact that we're using real names and real identities and letting people kind of identify themselves and verify their profiles, it's the incentive is there for everyone to kind of, oh, I want to be involved and I want to keep this community clean. And we see, you know, when all these people come together for the same cause, they kind of help, you know, we all want to see it succeed and all of the community members want to see it succeed. So if you even try to misbehave, you will almost like immediately get a slap on the hand from someone because everybody feels that this community is their own and they want to take care of it. So we've seen very, very little abuse.
Who's moderating it? Who does that?
So we are currently there's one person doing it, but we've been getting tons of emails from our members and who just want to know how they can do more and how they can get involved with Rooster. So we are soon going to start building tools where people from the community can actually just, you know, apply to become moderators and help manage the community on their own. And we're really, really happy to see how many people, you know, actually want to do it and actually are looking to get involved. And it's really heartwarming.
So you're saying that the moderation and the management actually is happening in Berkeley?
Yeah.
And so are you all volunteers? Are there paid positions? Are there staff? How does that work?
So Rooster is a company, and it's part of, I think, a growing trend that I'm kind of seeing of companies who are mission-driven and socially aware and socially responsible. So we do have paid employees.
So does that mean that there's advertising on Rooster?
Currently, no. So we're not currently advertising. We're, in fact, not making any money. For 2 years, it's been kind of a pet project for most of our group, and we kind of, you know, all had our day jobs or were students or whatever we were doing. And as it kind of, you know, took on a life of its own and started growing and started seeing demand, you know, I was the first one who kind of left everything I was doing and started doing this with no salary for 2 years. And we kind of got by. And I'm very, very happy to say that about half a year ago, we got our first investment from private investors who are an amazing group of people who share our mission and our vision and really believe in the power of local communities and know, like we do, that the future is in local and in bringing back the community sense that we all miss. So some of our backers have backed excellent companies like Change.org and Etsy, Lyft. Those are all companies that we really admire and look up to. So having these people and their expertise is really going to help us succeed. Also, we're backed by the Portland Seed Fund, which we're very, very proud of because they are really the heart and soul of the entrepreneurship community in Portland, and they understand the community probably better than anyone. So it's really, you know, they're great partners for us.
Well, that is really interesting to me. So, because what I heard you say was that you have investors that are have now invested actual money in Rooster.
Mm-hmm.
But is there a revenue model down the road, or are they just investing as part of their, you know, social, like giving it back to the community with expectation
so,
of return?
I should say we're not monetizing right now. We're not making money right now because all of our focus right now is just in building these great communities, talking with our members, building tools that help them share better and help them connect better. And just, you know, bringing that vision to life and focusing on our mission and on growing that mission. But in a few years from now, what we see is there's definitely going to be a business model. And I believe that we all believe that if you can make a positive impact on many people's lives, on the lives of millions, then there's definitely a way to make money there, right? And by being mission-driven and caring about community, what we want to see is that any business model that's attached to Rooster kind of brings the the resources and supports back to the community. So there are so many ways to support local causes, support local businesses, support local economies and communities, and make money in a way that is sustainable and creates a win-win for everyone. So that's where we kind of see it going, even though we're not doing any of that right now.
And can you share what some of those, looking forward, what some of those revenue models that, you know, still hold true to the mission might look like? Because that's exciting, too.
Yeah, I think so. I wouldn't want to speak too soon because, you know, we're really focused on just building awesome communities, and who knows how the future will turn out. But I think, you know, it's well known that local businesses, for example, are really the heart of what drives the economy.
Yes.
And a lot of the local businesses are small businesses, and actually 90% of them are just one person working from home, you know, starting their yoga instruction business, or starting out as a plumber or technician, or just a solo entrepreneur. And I think if we can support those guys, then we're directly giving back to the community and to the local economy. So that's one example, but I really, you know, I think that there's a huge opportunity with local communities. We're just not sure what it is yet.
I so agree. I think that, you know, the especially with kind of the disconnect of, you know, politics and government on a larger scale, that local business and local communities and, you know, kind of going back to the idea of a hamlet, in a sense, is going to be the strongest, you know, model in the future going forward, especially with climate change. I think that local community will support itself and should have that kind of infrastructure. So is it all volunteer right now, or do we have paid staff?
We have paid staff, as I mentioned before. They're mostly underpaid, but and mostly mission-driven, but
sure.
We have paid staff.
That's so exciting. I have that question. What are some other examples of either skills or what's the weirdest roosters? What are some really weird ones that you've encountered where you're like scratching your head?
I don't know if they're weird or they're funny. So we actually got this a number of times. This is kind of funny, of people like exchanging actual roosters on rooster.
Actual roosters.
Growing hens and roosters and just exchanging them. That's always funny, and they always say something funny.
That is very funny.
But we had all kinds of things. I think maybe there's so much going on there right now that for me it's kind of hard to follow all the amazing stories.
Well, give us a few examples.
I remember one about it was a person in Portland who has goats, and the goats love munching on blackberry bushes. So she just posted a rooster like, "Hey, can if you have a yard with blackberry bushes and you want it trimmed in an organic way, I can bring my goats over." And she actually got a few responses on it, and she sent her goats over, and it was a perfect win-win situation. And that was definitely something I could never have imagined happening, but life is strange and weird and awesome.
It is true, and we do have urban goats. I was just walking past, on a walk recently, came across a front yard with two friendly goats. Full-size goats greeting people as they walked by and passing by. So in Portland, you know, we do have a fair share of livestock, at least chickens and goats, an occasional pig. What are some other unusual roosters that you can think of?
So I think that there was one neighbor in Portland. I think this was on some holiday. Her son was playing with his new drone that he got. And the drone got stuck up on a tree. And she posted on Rooster and asked if someone can come over. And sure enough, there was a hero that came over and helped retrieve the drone. We have people who arrange potlucks. There's actually one that I think is quite regular as far as I've seen. They're like neighborhood potlucks. Anyone on Rooster can just join and bring their food that they've cooked. What else interesting? We have people, definitely a lot of language exchanges, teaching each other languages. We have people helping each other repair, you know, electrical appliances so that they don't have to throw them away. There's a lot of things, and I think that actually this is an interesting story. It's also been on the news. I think this is one of the most touching things that we have seen, and definitely is the reason. Like, stories like these, like this one, are really the reason why we started it all. So we have a member called Rachel Duboga, and she's a teacher. She's, I think, in her early 30s or late 20s, and she's been diagnosed with ALS. And she loves cooking, and she's always cooked all her life, but now the progression of her disease has kind of disabled her. And she was brave enough to post on Rooster and reach out and say, like, hey, you know, I love to cook. I'm really great at it. I can't quite handle, you know, the pots and the pans, and I can't lift these things now. But if you want to learn how to cook, I invite you to my kitchen, and you can help me out, and I can teach you. And she posted it, and within 24 hours, she had 50 neighbors reach out to her.
50?
Yeah, and I think she had maybe like 10 people show up in her house. And from what I know, until today, she has this cooking club going where they meet every week and just cook something new and have fun together. And, you know, they just found each other and made friends. So you know, that's a story that we all, you know, keep close to our hearts and want to see more of.
That's beautiful. How have you used Rooster yourself?
Oh, many ways. So, you know, originally when it was just this tiny mailing list that my husband and I started, we just used it. It was just our friends, right? So it was Thanksgiving 2013. And by that time, our mailing list has grown to probably 300 people or so. And of course, we didn't know everyone on there. Some of them were our friends, but some of them just came from friends and friends of friends. And we just decided to post that we're having a potluck for Thanksgiving and anyone can join us. And we got together a group of 8 people and we had dinner together and we laughed and we had so much fun. And two of these people are still, you know, close friends of ours. We go hiking together on the weekend. One of them even helped us code a little for the website.
But you didn't know them before. You met them through Rooster.
We met at the potluck that we arranged. You know, we've used it to borrow things. We've used it to give away furniture when we were moving from Palo Alto to Berkeley. So it's like really easy to do.
It's so wonderful. Well, let me do another mid-head. I'm Rabia Yeaman with The Digital Divide on KBOO Portland. And today I'm talking with Tali Saar, one of the co-founders of Rooster. And that's portland.rooster.co is the website where you can go. You sign up. And then you can offer your services, give away possessions, request. If you have a need, you can post your needs. And if you have something you want to share or give away, you can do that. And no money is exchanged. That's the number one rule, no money, right? So I love that now we're talking about an economy that doesn't have money in it, where we've taken the money out of it.
Yeah.
And that forms really human bonds, because I think when you take, you know, when your actions or your possessions, when we take the commodity aspect out, it changes the entire dynamic. Do you agree?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, you know, this concept has far-reaching implications and far beyond, you know, what I could hope to change.
It's really kind of subversive. Don't you think it's kind of subversive in a way?
I think, you know, as humans and as a society, we all have a very basic need, which is the need for connection, the need for human connection. We are social animals, whether you like it or not. We all need it. And when we are secluded, we suffer. And when we are alone or lonely, we suffer. And that need is as basic as food and drink. And it's definitely more basic. You know, we all have a need for money, but what is that money? Money symbolizes, you know, with money we can get things that we need or that we think we need. But money is not a substitute for human connection. And I think by taking money out of the equation, will bring people back to you know, being able to form these connections that we just need.
Yeah, I really love it. You know, there's something when you exchange money with someone, right? You don't have to make a connection. You know, it can stop right there, but when you're making an exchange or gifting or receiving, and there isn't money involved, then there isn't that kind of that mask of the commodity where you don't have to connect because you have money, right?
Exactly.
But if there isn't any money involved, then you almost have to connect as a necessity. You know, just because it really changes the dynamics, and I love that.
That's exactly it.
Have you ever had disputes between people on Rooster where, like, it just didn't go right? something went wrong.
Yeah, honestly, very few. I have to say, I'm really glad to see that it's very few. You know, we've been in Portland in a year. Over 30,000 members, and can probably count the complaints we got on the fingers of one hand. I think it's due to a lot of like expectation setting, right? Again, when you're buying and selling, if you're selling me something and I paid you money for it, I kind of have all these expectations that go with it about, you know, your level of service and the quality of the item, and it has to be just so. But when we're all there for the same cause, like, these things kind of go away and everybody understands that, you know, it's a free community. Everybody is just there to help. If somebody, you know, couldn't help you right now, it's okay. There's no expectation that they do it. You're not paying them. They're just a friendly neighbor. So we've had very few complaints. And the complaints that we did have were, you know, people being rude in their messages or something like that, which I think you can't avoid when you reach a size of 30,000 members. But it's very, very rare, I'm glad to say.
Right, because people are people.
Yeah.
I know our listeners are very security conscious. So when they sign up and register, how does Rooster protect, you know, the safety and of the data that the people are registering with? Like, how do you protect, how do you ensure their safety?
Of course, you know, the data is stored on protected servers, just like, you know, any company and website that you're used to signing up on. And of course, we never sell your data and we never let it outside of the company. So that's, and you know, that's absolutely obvious. So it's, I would say it's just like any other social media tool that you use. You know, the members are there. You have an option to verify yourself. You have an option with whoever you interact with to make sure that they are verified and choose to interact with them. Based on that, maybe they're nice enough, so you want to interact with them even if they're not verified. So we're kind of listening to the community and finding ways and finding, you know, what the people want and what will make them feel safer and more secure in communications, and then we just go and build that. So it's always a work in progress. Having said that, you know, there's always risk. Like when you use Craigslist, you might run into, you know, nasty people. It happens way less on Rooster because it's a community, but like things can always happen. So just, you know, we expect, we have it in our guidelines, you know, be responsible, use it responsibly, you know, make sure you're interacting with people you're comfortable with. If you're not comfortable with the person, don't interact with them, and you can block them, things like that. So it generally just, it seems to work.
What if somebody wanted to start their own Rooster in, you know, in a location where there wasn't, I'm sure if somebody said, oh, I'm in Portland and I want to start a Rooster, you would say, well, there already is one. But let's say there's someone in another city where there isn't a Rooster and somebody said, I want to have a Rooster here. How would they proceed? So how does it work?
That's something that we're actually in the process of putting together. So, you know, rumors spread, and it was really funny and amazing for us to see, right? We started this small community in Palo Alto, and suddenly people in Mountain View and Sunnyvale were like, oh, I heard about this from a friend. How can I start it here? And we kind of helped them start it. And somehow people in Portland heard about it and started emailing us. And right now, you know, the success we've had in Portland and all the news coverage and people sharing on Facebook, the word gets out. So we're getting approached by hundreds and hundreds of people from all over. At first it was all over the U.S., but now I think we've been approached by people in Japan, Brazil, Venezuela, Netherlands.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
That's really exciting.
And they all kind of want to know, okay, how do we get started? And the truth is that right now you can get started, yes. You can sign up and for a waiting list in your city, and the more people sign up for that waiting list, you know, the more it'll signal to us that that's where we go next. But what's happening is that Portland is playing an incredibly important role because it's the first community that's kind of, you know, grown on its own and is managing itself and is succeeding. And it means that everything that's gone right in Portland and everything that's gone wrong that we have to correct will eventually become the guideline and the instruction manual for other communities. Like, look, this is how Portland did it, and this is what we've learned, and this is how you can do it. So right now we're still, you know, learning, documenting, preparing the website to be something that can scale and that can sustain all these communities, and hopefully in a few months, we will you know, enable more cities to join because they obviously want it. We just want to make sure that they succeed just as Portland has.
So I don't know if this, you were just meant this, but you said that Portland is managing itself, its own rooster. What does that mean? It's managing itself.
You know, the members are inviting one another and are taking care of one another and are weeding out the bad seeds when they see them, and where it's kind of becoming a sustainable community even as it grows, right? Because it's very different managing a community of 1,000 people and a community of 30,000 people.
Yeah.
And, you know, Portland is the first time where we're seeing it grow and sustain and, you know, the community kind of coming together and being reliable and sustainable at that size.
Now, in Portland, of course, you know, it's the city of Portland, but there are outlying areas and other small, you know, smaller cities nearby or communities nearby.
Yeah.
So would each of those communities, like I'll use the next town called Beaverton. So would Beaverton have their own rooster? Because they're kind of like, you know, it's outside of Portland. It's not in Portland.
That's a great example of something that we learned in Portland, right? So we started with launching a Portland rooster, which is kind of divided inside into the six main, you know, North Portland and Southwest and East Portland and all of those areas.
Right.
And as more people joined, we started getting these emails like, hey, I'm actually in Beaverton. So at first what we did is we thought, okay, let's just allow the people in the Beaverton to join, you know, West Portland or whatever neighborhood was closest to them. But the more people we got, the more they were like, hey, we really want to have, you know, a Beaverton rooster. So we started that. So I think, so we have four of the biggest suburbs have their own rooster now, which are Beaverton, Gresham, Hillsborough, and Vancouver. But now we're getting also requests from, you know, Lake Oswego, or places like that. So,
right.
So that's what I mean by, you know, there's a lot to learn in how people use it, in who of the suburbs want to be involved, what size of suburb actually requires a rooster of their own, and what kind of suburbs actually feel that they can join the main Portland one. So kind of, you know, learning how to manage that and how to give everyone, you know, the community that they want is what we do in Portland.
That is so exciting. I love this process. This is a really organic process of kind of developing, you know, like you had an idea and then it, especially when it hit Portland, but I'm sure from the very beginning, kind of keep learning, like you said, based on how people are using it and the kind of feedback that you're getting, and you're being responsive to that. And I love that.
Yeah, thanks. We really believe in that. I think it's a website that is there to serve people and to serve the community and to do good for the community. So there's no point. We almost think about it as a communal effort, right? There's no point in us trying to come up with like rules or this is how it'll be and this is how it behaves. Like, we feel it's much better to kind of let the community use it and tell us, and then we come up with the solutions that help the community thrive, or the community comes up with the right ideas.
Right. It's fantastic. I'm Rabia Yeaman with The Digital Divide. I'm talking with Tali Sarr, one of the co-founders of Rooster. Rooster is a website that you can register with. In Portland, you can register at portland.rooster.co. And essentially, it is there's no money involved.
Pay it forward movement.
Yeah, pay it forward movement. So if you have a need or desire, you can post that. And hopefully someone who's also registered in your community might respond. We've heard a lot of amazing examples of that. Or if you have something to share or gift, you can post that. And is it like first come, first serve, or does the person posting get to decide who, you know, like if three people responded, they would, what?
So in that sense, the mechanism is quite similar to a Craigslist, I would say. You post your thing, and then people see it, and they start responding, and you can, it's really up to you. We see a lot of people just saying, like, oh, you know, I had three responses to this. If the first two fall through, I will let you know. So people kind of self-manage the queue, so to say, if they have multiple responses.
Right.
But also, once you're done, you simply resolve your post. So now everyone can see that it's done, and you stop getting contacted as soon as it's actually resolved.
Wonderful. Tali, I just want to thank you so much for your time today and for being on The Digital Divide. I'll go ahead and send you.
Thank you so much for having me. This was great. A lot of fun. And thanks to all our listeners. If I can take the opportunity to just say thank you to all our members. We take great joy in seeing all the things that people accomplish together. And every time we see a thank you note, every time, you know, someone gets something that they needed or is able to connect with another person, it just warms our hearts and it keeps us going. So I just want to thank everyone. And we'll actually be coming to Portland for a month in August just to hang out with our community and be there on the ground. So we're looking forward to meeting you guys.
Now, are you going to post that on Rooster?
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much. And you have a lovely day. And congratulations on the success of this startup. You know, a lot of ideas out there that don't make it to fruition. A lot of ideas that kind of, you know, get a little bit of a start, but then they sputter and they don't make it. So I'm always really thrilled to see such a wonderful idea and concept not only come to fruition, but, you know, to kind of just rocket into the stratosphere and be really successful. So congratulations.
Well, that's right. I really appreciate it.
All right. And thank you so much. And we're going to go ahead and close Digital Divide for today. Be sure and tune in every second Friday of the month on KBOO Portland for The Digital Divide.
And it's 11:57 a.m. on KBOO Portland, your community radio. Coming up at noon is, well, the News at Noon headlines, followed with some important community announcements, in turn followed by Moving On with your host, the inimitable, the one and only, and all-around mensch, Don Jacobson. That's all coming up today, right now.
It's time for the KBOO News at Noon for Friday, July 8th, 2016. The Black Lives Matter movement has condemned last night's murder of five police officers in Dallas, Texas, saying that the group advocates dignity, justice, and freedom, not murder. Thursday's shooting took place around 8:45 p.m. in the midst of a protest of hundreds of people organized by Black Lives Matter in Dallas. Footage of the event shows people running for cover while officers ignore the protesters and look towards the tops of buildings, where at least two snipers were firing at police. One suspect was killed at the scene, and at least two others have been taken into custody. The Dallas March was one of dozens held in cities across the country last night to challenge the police killings of Alton Sterling in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and Philando Castile in Minnesota this week. Both of these murders were caught on video and have brought into question the claims that reforms have been made in police departments. Over the last year, the rate of fatal police shootings of young black men in the U.S. has been five times higher than that of white men of the same age. In local news, a right-wing activist who has frequently threatened and harassed Portland activists, particularly women of color, was arrested last night when he pulled out a gun at a Black Lives Matter protest in Pioneer Square. Michael Strickland, a white male, has pulled out his gun at other protests over the last year, but last night was the first time that police responded. In national news, whistleblower and political prisoner Chelsea Manning was hospitalized this week for unknown reasons. Manning's lawyers have confirmed that she experienced a health crisis, but said that the military would not give them full information about her condition. Chelsea Manning is in military prison for her release of thousands of documents through WikiLeaks that exposed the reality of the U.S. war in Afghanistan. The U.S. House of Representatives this morning approved a bill to increase drug treatment programs across the country, but the bill does not actually provide the money to pay for the programs. This bill is expected to pass the Senate and be signed by President Obama, but there's still no plan for how the project will be funded. In Zimbabwe, a massive general strike has called into question the regime of Robert Mugabe, the 92-year-old leader who has held power in Zimbabwe since 1987. Riot police have been deployed in the capital, Harare, as protesters took to the streets to demand that Mugabe step down. Civil servants have joined the protests after the government failed to pay their salaries. The protesters are spreading the word on Twitter with the hashtag ZimShutdown2016. That's it for the KBOO News at Noon for Friday, July 8th, 2016. Tune in every weekday at 5 for more local, national, and international news produced right here in our Portland studios. For KBOO News, I'm Jenka Soderberg.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Crop Up Dinner Series and Market Showcase. The Aurora Dinner will be held July 21st from 5:30 to 9 p.m. The dinner series lets you dine on dishes built around Oregon's specialty crops that are grown in the local regions surrounding each dinner site. It has been designed to increase awareness of the bountiful diversity of Oregon's specialty crops, including fruits, vegetables, tree nuts, dried fruits, and nurseries.